This week in the studio, we're playing with live ammo when Bob Seger joins me on the anniversary of Live Bullet. I got to ramble, and I was born a rambling,
gambling man. It took 12 years to make that album, Live Bullet. It's a joy to do. It's like a tribal kind of thing. You can't get that rush from anything else. Here I am, on the road again.
There I am, on the stage. I really am proud of Live Bullet. That stands up. That is a ferocious album, you know, and it's a lot of fun to every now and then take a long trip and listen to that, because the energy on that is, you talking about six guys that are white hot, you know, they're after it.
Hi, this is Bob Seger in the studio.
Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band's April 1976 double live album, Live Bullet, may be the biggest selling album in history to have missed the top 30 initially. You see, Live Bullet sales took off after Bob Seger's breakthrough Night Moves skyrocketed later that same year. But realize this, Night Moves was Seger's 10th effort. Bridging the struggle between toiling and relative obscurity and fame, Live Bullet allowed Bob Seger to draw a bead on stardom. Recorded in front of an adoring hometown crowd in Detroit at the venerable Cobo Hall Arena, Seger's previous experiences in that huge building had been on the other side of the spotlights, up in the cheap seats.
I think that rock and roll was born as an amalgamation of country and R&B. If you listen to Mystery Train by Elvis Presley, or you listen to Hound Dog, or you listen to the seminal rock and roll things, the New Orleans things of Fats Domino, Little Richard, and things like that, the initial exceedingly powerful rock and roll of the 50s, for me, it's still some of the most powerful stuff ever done, is very country influenced and very R&B influenced. And it's like when they almost come together, that it would Gene Vincent, you know, and things like that, Eddie Cochran, right on down the line. My high school buddies, we always made it a point to go down to Cobo Hall twice a year when James Brown would play. And he would play to a totally sold out house. You have, you know, the three drummers, two bass players, 5 million horns, you know, you know, and he had the review. I saw Bobby Blue Bland on the review. I saw James Brown review. I saw Dionne Warwick on the review, actually. Before she made it big with the middle of the road stuff that she became famous for, she was a rear shaken R&B singer. Yeah, in the James Brown review. And so we loved that. We'd go see, of course, and see the Motortown review, you know. And we loved black music. That's what we loved. It just was more visceral. It spoke to us. It had more energy, you know, than white music.
But you
Prior to the fall 1976 hit-laden Night Moves album, Ramblin' Gamblin' Man had been Bob Seger's sole national mid-chart hit.
I had reached a point after Ramblin' Gamblin' Man did rather well.
Did great.
I think I was about 23 then. Then the next 7 years or so were a little dry. And I've always called those years Bob learning to make albums, you know, because that's a whole different thing than making a hit single. And really, what I had to develop my writing, because I was on the road constantly where I didn't really have much of a chance to write. I was in, we were doing like 250 nights a year, playing here, there, and everywhere. I would say at some point, I just said to myself, I really enjoy doing this. I don't really want to have what musicians call a day gig. You know, I'll just keep doing it and I'll just keep enjoying it. And this is the way it's going to be. And then when we hit big, no one was more surprised than me, but no one was also more pleased. You know, it was kind of nice. I was old enough to appreciate it, I think, and to kind of take it sensibly.
Now, let's remember the musical times Bob Seger found himself in after Ramblin' Gamblin' Man. Hendrix, Joplin, and Jim Morrison were all dead, leaving a huge void. Newcomers James Taylor, Cat Stevens, and veteran songwriter Carole King had shifted much of the focus away from rock and roll bands. Here's Bob Seger with me in the studio.
Well, the Beatles had broken up, and I'd always liked folk music. I mean, I was a huge Tom Rush fan, Joni Mitchell fan, Bob Dylan fan, you know, and it was just in the areas that I played, which were mostly bars, people wanted big, loud stuff, you know, dance, or they wanted power stuff. And most of my bands thought in terms of that. And every time I try to teach my bands at that time ballads, they were just too clunky on them, if you know what I mean. They didn't have the subtlety. Mm-hmm. They were like animal musicians, you know. So I took like about 6 months off and just tried to develop that aspect of my songwriting, and I thought it was really fruitful. And I kind of laugh when I listen to the album now because it's some of the stuff is really romantic and stuff. But nevertheless, it was something that I had to go through. Yeah. You know, it was almost like I had to say, "Stop! I got to learn how to write ballads."
Up with the sun. Gone with the wind. She always said I was lazy. Leaving my home, leaving my friends, running when things get too crazy. Out to the road, out beneath the stars, feeling the breeze, passing the cars. Women have come, women have gone, everyone trying to cage me, yeah. Some were so sweet, I barely got free, others they only enraged me. Sometimes at night, I see their faces, I feel the traces they've left on my soul. Those are the memories that make me a wealthy soul. I tell you, those are the memories that make me a wealthy soul. Traveling man, love when I can. Turn loose my hand, cause I'm going. Traveling man, yeah.
Originally on Bob Seger's 1975 studio album Beautiful Loser, that's the medley of Travelin' Man and the title song from the Live Bullet, newly remastered and expanded double album. Coming up next in the studio, Bob Seger reveals the hardships he endured growing up that toughened him for the long, hard rock and roll road ahead. Be sure to follow In the Studio on Facebook and hear more rockstar interviews at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Bob Seger for the newly remastered Live Bullet.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Bob Seger with Redbeard.
Thanks, Bob. Seger, his older brother George, and their parents had a promising future. At a time when only a minority of the population attended college, Seger's father had 3 years of medical school. But like hundreds of thousands of Detroiters, the elder Seger ended up in an auto plant. The stability was shattered, though, when Bob's father left them all. Looking back, Bob Seger remembers vividly what his unskilled mother and teenage brother had to do for the family just to survive.
Well, my brother became a grocery bag packing boy, you know, a pack boy, and then he would like also clean out supermarkets. He got into supermarkets. So, of course, I was too young to do anything. I just going to school. So my mother cleaned houses. That's what she did. And then she was also like a kind of a nurse companion to this elderly lady, cleaned their house and was sort of like full time there. You know what I mean? And then I was going to school, and then my brother was working at the supermarkets, you know, basically. I remember we were in a one room at one point, and we had bunk beds, and my brother and I both slept in the upper bunk bed together, and my mother slept in the lower one, and we had a hot plate, no refrigerator, and it was over on 3rd Street in Ann Arbor, and that was probably the low point, you know. And then we, I think a little, maybe a year later, we got a one-bedroom apartment, you know, and I was sleeping on the couch, and then by the time I was 16, I was also in one of the same kind of programs. I would work. I did things like delivering pizzas, selling clothes in Ann Arbor to like college professors and stuff. It was a real conservative clothing store, and they let me work there. And I worked there about like 4 hours a day, and then I went to school, you know. And then on the weekends, I delivered pizzas, or I played, you know, a little later I played with my band when I was like 17, and I made more money playing with the band than I did delivering pizzas.
You hit the street, you feel them staring. You know they hate you, you can feel their eyes appearing. Because you're different, because you're free. Because you're everything deep down they wish they could be. Well, they look at me, they look at me, they look at me. Watching.
Mastered, looking back from Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band's early 76 release, Live Bullet. So after 8 trips to the firing line, what convinced Bob and his manager, Eddie Punch Andrews, to bankroll this live recording with their own money?
I think what kept me going really was that I think the audiences genuinely liked what I did and what the bands did. We would travel all over the eastern United States, mostly, I would say, Michigan through Florida. So we would play south, we would play in Kentucky and Tennessee, Ohio. We would go down to Florida and play. I enjoyed, you know, the rush of the live performance and everything like that. And it seemed like a good way to make a living, and I really didn't mind the traveling. It was kind of romantic in the way to travel and see new things. I saw a lot of great sunsets. I saw a lot of stars at night. It wasn't so bad, you know, but looking back on it now, you know, it was, I can't believe I did it, but then I was very young, you know, when I did that. I never really thought of quitting. I thought of rearranging things, and like when I did the acoustic thing, I thought about maybe trying to write some softer stuff and just getting into sensitive areas, because that part of my songwriting was blunted by the fact that my bands were a little aggressive and they couldn't bring off the more sensitive things in the, with their playing. And so, again, that's why I went and did the acoustic period. But it was really fruitful because it made me see that I could also reach people in that arena. And now I think one of the luckiest things about my music is that people don't expect all ballads or all rock and roll. They accept me on both levels.
That's true.
And one of the things I patterned my writing and my career after, one of the people was Van Morrison. Big influence on me. Because I could buy every Van Morrison album. There were about 7 or 8 of them in a row that were really, really good. And they were consistent, but he was constantly good, you know? And I mean, I think everybody has their own limitations as to what they can do, or I think they're limited by what they like musically, you know, to a degree. But I never got bored, and it never sounded the same to me. Van Morrison's albums never sounded the same to me. And I think that was one of the things I really admired about him, and I think I sort of tried to pattern myself. I said, if I can keep up consistently, you know, I mean, I have this talent, whether people consider it extraordinary or just good or fair or whatever, I just want to stay true to it and do the best I can do within my limitations. It's not a matter of doing what's familiar or expected, because I absolutely rail against that. It is a matter of just trying to, does Long Way Home stand up against Famous Final Scene or something like that? You know what I mean? That's my kind of standard.
And as for A Band of Brothers, Bob Seger knew when his clip was fully loaded.
Well, I formed several before the Silver Bullet, but it was just, I think it was just, I wanted the noise, you know? I wanted to make some noise, as Tom Petty said, look at me, mama, make up some noise. Boy, oh boy, what a great line. And, you know, it there's a visceral thing with rock and roll that I just missed, you know? And I said, yeah, I can do a couple of ballads here and there. And even now, today, in our shows, we'll do maybe 3 or 4 ballads and maybe 3 or 4 mid-tempos, but most of it is just storming rock and roll. And it's really the most fun stuff to play. I mean, obviously, there's a tremendous energy, and you love to see the crowd reacting to the energy, and you can see it right out in the faces when you're playing it. And it's a joy to do. It's like a tribal kind of thing. You can't get that rush from anything else.
Good hosts, I raise my whiskey glass, give them a toast. I'm sure they know it's true. I got no rap against Southern states. Every time I've been there, it's been great. But now I'm leaving and I can't be laid. And to myself and you, that's why I'm going to Kathmandu. Really, really going to. Hey, if I ever get out of here,
Originally on the Beautiful Losers studio album, that's Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band with great remastered sound on Kathmandu, a place in Nepal that Seger would one day visit in support of special needs children through the Special Olympics organization. Up next, Bob turns the page on a new chapter when he shares with us an unreleased addition to the newly remastered Live Bullet. Be sure to follow In the Studio on Facebook and hear more rockstar interviews at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Bob Seger, Live Bullet.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Bob Seger with Redbeard.
Thanks again, Bob. The song from Bob Seger's 1975 Cobo Hall concert set that found its way, faithfully, onto the Live Bullet album was Turn the Page. Here's Bob Seger.
I was playing with a couple of guys from Oklahoma called Teagarden and Van Winkle. This was just maybe 1 or 2 years prior to the Silver Bullet Band forming. And we played in Madison, Wisconsin. I remember after we got done playing, we played on cafeteria tables at a university there. Okay? In the cafeteria. We were not the headliner. And they loved us, as a matter of fact. And when we left, I don't know, maybe one of the guys from Oklahoma or something like that, the girls liked him too much or something. But I remember when we left, we were in a van, a large van, and there were these drunken students were like rocking the van and throwing beer bottles at it and things like that. Okay. But that was one instance. We drove down the road. It was in the era when long hair was not cool. Okay. Like 71, let's say. So we drove down the interstate a ways to Eau Claire, Wisconsin. We were heading home and going to go around through Chicago and then back up to Michigan. We pulled into a truck stop. And we had these two very burly guys who drove us and set up our equipment, but they were asleep in the truck. They wanted to take a break and we wanted to eat. And we were all skinny little long-haired guys, right? So we went into this truck stop and it was about 3 in the morning or something. There was a bunch of these redneck salesmen, for lack of a better word, you know, big, heavy set, plaid suited guys, you know, and they saw us and they started the whole thing, you know, hey, look at those girls. It's like an Easy Rider. Okay. And we laugh now. No, we weren't laughing then.
This is from 72 also, about being on the road. It's called Turn the Page. Yeah. One, two, three, and... On a long and lonesome highway east of Omaha, you can listen to the engine moaning out his one note song. You can think about the woman or the girl you knew the night before. But your thoughts will soon be wandering the way they always do when you're riding 16 hours and there's nothing much to do. And you don't feel much like riding, you just wish the trip was through. See, here I am on the road again. There I am up on the stage. Here I go playing star again. There I go, turn the page. Will you walk into a restaurant strung out from the road, and you feel the eyes upon you as you're shaking off the cold? You pretend it doesn't bother you, but you just want to explode. Most times you can't hear them talk, other times you can. All the same old cliches. Is that a woman or a man? And you always seem outnumbered. You don't dare make a stand. A here I am on the road again. There I am up on the stage. Here I go playing the star again. There I go, turn the page. Out there in the spotlight, you're a million miles away. Every ounce of energy you try to give away. As the sweat pulls out your body like the music that you play. Later in the evening, as you lie awake in bed, with the echoes from the amplifiers ringing in your head, you smoke the day's last cigarette, remembering what she said. Ah, here I am on the road again. There I am up on the stage. Here I go playing the star again. There I go, turn the page.
You know, we were so visceral most of the time, and when we'd play Turn the Page, it would suddenly, people would listen, whereas they would like kind of move to it, and maybe they'd be talking through our hard rock stuff and partying and stuff, and suddenly there was a message there, you know. And I tell you, when you know, when I think of those years, you've kind of brought it all up to me, brought it all back to me. What I remember a lot from those years was the very peaceful night driving. There'd be just, you know, miles and miles, hundreds of miles of night driving. And a lot of the time people would want to sleep, so you wouldn't even have the radio on, you know, and you'd be like singing songs in your head and things like that. And a lot of that feeling went into Turn the Page, that stillness, if you know what I mean. There's an aura of that. It's not a depressing song, it's a still song. That was what occurred after the noise reverberated away and the ears cleared and everything was just the sound of the road and the distant lights and the trying to stay awake and planning your next career move, whatever, you know, or thinking about how it went the night before, how is it going to go the next night, you know what I mean? It was kind of like the stillness of the traveling and a lot of night traveling. And I really grew to like that. And even these days, I like driving at night, long distances. You know, there's a stillness that I can relate to. It really gives you a chance to think and assess and stuff like that. It's sort of like downtime. And I always remember that. I always remember the night driving because you'd done your job. You were sort of physically spent. And now you could relax and you'd earn your living. So a lot of the time I didn't trust anybody else to drive. And so I would do a lot of the driving myself, you know, and say, I just want to make it home safe. You know, these guys, you know, they partied and everything. And I was a singer and the singer never gets to party, you know, got to sing the next night. So I was always the freshest and the most normal. So I would do my sleeping during the day, you know, and I spent a lot of nights doing that. And there's a lot of that in Turn the Page as well.
That song contributed greatly to busting the Big Only in the Midwest reputation that had dogged Bob Seger, along the way to setting the stage for platinum sellers Night Moves, Stranger in Town, Against the Wind, and Like a Rock. Over 6 million people have purchased Live Bullet. So what was the magic ingredient on Live Bullet that had eluded Bob Seger on the 8 studio albums before it?
We couldn't capture that energy. I think Jay Giles used to have that problem.
They did. You're right. Boy, yeah. What a great live band.
Yeah, incredible.
I would not want to go on after them.
Right. And an incredible live band. And they'd get in the studio and they didn't have the proper guy behind the board to capture that live energy or whatever. I think that was our problem for a long time, is we couldn't capture the live energy. I mean, Springsteen used to tell me that was his problem. He couldn't get the raw energy onto the records until Born to Run. I think that's, you know, happened to a lot of artists, but I really am proud of Live Bullet. That stands up. That is a ferocious album, you know, and it's a lot of fun to every now and then take a long trip and listen to that, because the energy on that is, you talking about 6 guys that are white hot, you know, they're after it. And it's just 2 nights, you know, it's all live. There's no tricks or anything on it.
I still remember it was all a man in blue and shining. Our 60 Cadillac was roaring through Nebraska riding. Doing 120, man, the fields was bending over. Headed out for the mountains, knowing we was traveling further. All the fires were blazing and the spinning wheels were turning, turning. Yeah, my cousin Simon, brother, brother, she was burning, burning. Southern funky school teacher. She had a line on something heavy, but we couldn't reach her. We told her that we needed something that would get us going. She pulled out all she had and laid it on the counter, showing all I had to do was take my money down and pick it up. Cops came busting in and then we lit out in a pickup truck and go. Get out of Tampa, better go, go. Get out of Tampa, better go. Get out of Tampa, better go, go. Get out of Tampa, cause you look just like a commie. Get out of Denver, better. Get out of Denver. Well, the lights were flashing and the sirens were screaming. We had to pinch each other just to see if we was dreaming. Made it to love and last along the lesson. Half an hour long, it started drizzling and it turned into a thunder shower.
Get out of Denver. Just one of the 6 million reasons why Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's been 35 years and over 51 million albums sold since Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band put their hopes and dreams in the crosshairs and fired a volley of songs into an adoring crowd of Motor City true believers, to where Seger and the band returned for 3 sold-out nights earlier this year.
I'm just very fortunate that the fans still, you know, really like our music and really like to see us live. And I try not to think too much about why or anything. I just try to go out there and do the best we can do, you know, and get a lot of rest when we're on the road and stuff, and have a lot of I have a lot of respect for my audience, I think, and I think everybody in the band does too, and so we try to do our best. We do long sound checks. We try to not overbook ourselves, even though, especially me, this is mostly my doing, because I sing so hard for 2 hours 20 2 hours 30 minutes a night. I try never to do more than 4 concerts a week, and so we have like one day break and 1 2-day break built into every week on the road, and we can make a lot more money, and I could sing a lot worse, you know. And but I respect the audiences enough, and if I can't sing on any given night, which is very rare, I've got a throat of cast iron, actually. I very seldom have throat problems. But if I can't, I will not play that night, you know. I think I'm fortunate radio has played us so much. You know, I mean, this I've had a really lucky life, you know, as far as this is concerned. I work really hard on my music, but nevertheless, you have to have the support of a lot of different people.
Lay around home alone on a rainy night like this, starving for your love, hungering for one kiss. Heavy rain up ahead, beating on my window pane. Beats so loud and clear, seems to call your name, yeah. Got nowhere to turn to, tired of being alone, feel like breaking up somebody's home. I know it's useless hanging on when you belong to someone else, but I lose control when you're with someone.
There's a new bonus track on the newly remastered version of Live Bullet called I Feel Like I'm Breaking Up Somebody's Home, an Al Jackson soul song done by Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. I'm Redbeard. I'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest, Bob Seger. In the Studio is written and produced by Redbeard for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.